finally looking in the mirror and seeing that me I love. I'm getting back to the girl I was.
Ag Talk, Your Story Matters, is America's platform for women in agriculture to share their thoughts, ideas, and stories. This is a safe space for everyone in agriculture, no matter what their role is, to come together and have real and raw conversations. We feature our Ag Women Connect members, guest speakers, and current topics across the nation that affect our agriculture industry. Our goal is to include others into our discussions, and we invite you to be a part of our conversation every week. Join us.
Hey, everybody, this is Vanessa Wood with Ag Talk. Your story matters. Today, I am so excited to welcome a very good friend of mine, Sarah Fallon from Wyoming. She has been a huge advocate for Ag Women Connect, but she is extremely smart when it comes to litigation and fighting for our farmers and ranchers. And so I'm just so excited to open up this Zoom and this conversation so y'all get to hear what she's been working on. She's a very busy woman, and she's just got so much to share with us today. So Sarah, welcome to Ag Talk. Let's go ahead and start with your background and where you're from and your business right now that you're getting off the ground.
Sure. Vanessa, thank you so much for having me. I've really enjoyed being a part of Ag Women Connect, so I'm just very excited to be here. My background, I am a sixth generation Wyoming ranch kid. I unfortunately did not grow up on the same ranch that my mother and all my grandparents grew up on, but we still have a ranch in Wyoming, and so I still like to claim that title. My family's been very involved in policy surrounding agriculture and natural resources. Both of my parents are attorneys, and they practice agriculture and natural resource law. So they solely represent farmers and ranchers, mostly in disputes against the federal government. So things like endangered species and clean water issues, land use issues, grazing out in the West, we have a lot of federal lands. And so issues like that. And when I was growing up, I was always very interested in those issues. I've been able to explain how the Endangered Species Act works since I was like 12. It's like a sickness in my family. We're all very interested in these issues. And so I went to undergrad at the University of Wyoming with wanting to get degrees in agriculture, communication, and environment and natural resources. And then I graduated with those degrees. And then I went to law school. And I had originally thought that I wanted to practice law the same way that my parents do. And I was going to go work in their law firm. So when I graduated law school, I did start out working for them, working on these issues. And yeah, I think God has a funny way of putting people on their right path. I had a TikTok account that I had mostly used because I had bottle calves in my backyard in Laramie, Wyoming. This story is so ridiculous. I had never been a big social media person. But my dad decided that I needed to take care of our bottle calves and I needed to have them in town in Laramie. And I lived in town. Like I shared a backyard fence with two other neighbors and I had these bottle calves and I was feeding them every day. I worked so hard to keep them quiet. I was cleaning my yard every day. And one day the gate blew open to my backyard. And I went to let my dog in. It was getting kind of late. I was getting ready to go to bed. And I noticed that the gate was open. My dog was gone. The two calves are gone. It is not exactly legal to have livestock in town. And so naturally, I panicked being a law student. And my roommate and I were running all over Laramie, Wyoming, looking for these calves. I figured out that running and looking for them wasn't going to work. So I was getting ready to go back to my house and I was going to get my pickup to drive around and look for them. And by the time I got to my house, there were already two cops sitting at my house. So the cops, and I'm like, dang it, you know, I know I'm in trouble. And the cops come up and they say, ma'am, are you missing a couple of cows? I'm like, sure enough, I am. they said, well, you're the only person with a horse trailer parked in your driveway. So we had to assume that it was you. And what had happened is these calves had gone a couple of blocks down the road and some other people who lived in my neighborhood saw them and they herded them into their backyard, didn't know what to do. So they called the cops. And so my roommate and I, that these calves had halters on them. And my roommate and I, we get dog leashes that we hook to the halters and we're dragging them back to my house. We just about get to my house and the cops have left at this point. We are getting one calf into my backyard, pulling the other one in, and his halter comes off. And we run Charley Angus cattle. So he's a black calf and he takes off running down the street. And so we're chasing this calf. You know, he had already had his bottle for the night and now he's all jacked up. Anybody who works with cattle understands what I'm saying, that now he's hard to get a hold of. My poor roommate's from Chicago. She doesn't know anything about cattle. My neighbors who are Vietnamese and don't know anything about cattle and also don't really speak English were also trying to help me. And I have this just chaotic situation where we're chasing him all over the place. I'm like yelling at the people who are trying to help me. No, go that way. No, he's not going to run you over. You know, just stand in front of him. And it felt like, I think, how my dad feels when he's yelling at me when we're working cattle. And we eventually got them chased into somebody else's backyard. I tell everyone to just back off. And I decide to go back to my house and get my rope. The most embarrassing thing that I ever have to tell anybody is the fact that I am a sixth generation Wyoming cowgirl and I cannot rope to save my life. I'm just terrible at it. And so I got my rope anyway. And now I have an audience. And I miraculously roped this calf. I only got one heel, but I couldn't let him go because I wasn't going to catch him again. It was just a lucky shot. And then I had to drag him blocks back to my house, barefooted in the dark in my pajamas, because while I was running all over trying to catch him, I had lost my shoes. And so I have all of these really sporadic, random videos on my Snapchat. And my friends are saying, you have to get a TikTok. You have to put this on TikTok. And so I stitch all of these little clips of me chasing this calf all over the place. And I make a TikTok. And so my very first video on TikTok got 50,000 views. And so I started using a TikTok to just update people about how these calves are doing in my backyard. And I was getting a lot of the animal rights people saying, well, the calves should be with their mother. You shouldn't take them away from their mother. It's like, you obviously don't know anything about bottle calves, because if they had mothers, that's where they'd be. And so I got to use it as a bit of an education tool with that. Fast forward a year, I had graduated law school. I was working at the law firm and I was working on a case. I don't know how many of you heard about the federal government shooting cattle in New Mexico from a helicopter, but our law firm was involved in that litigation. The first time it happened was in 2022. And we had filed a temporary restraining order, which basically just says, we want you to stop this action while we figure out if it's legal. I'm trying to get the federal government to not shoot the cattle yet. And the judge ruled against us. He said that the Forest Service was allowed to continue the shooting of these cattle because shooting them was, number one, not an irreparable harm. And I don't know if you've ever unshot something before, but it's pretty irreparable once you shoot something. And they also said that because there is not a law specifically saying that the federal government is not allowed to shoot cattle from a helicopter, that that inherently meant that they were allowed to do it. That is not the way our government is set up. You are supposed to have explicit permission for the government to do anything. And so I was very upset about this ruling. And the morning that the helicopters were going in the air to shoot these cattle, I got out my phone and I made a TikTok about the situation. And I don't know why I had done that, because I had never made a TikTok about a legal issue before, but it got like 500,000 views in 24 hours, something like that. And so then I had people reaching out to me from all over the United States, from New York and New Hampshire, Florida, just all over the place saying, what can we do to help this situation? And I was actually able to use TikTok as a tool. And we found people that lived in the area in New Mexico where this was happening that were able to write affidavits for our court case. And so that was when I realized that TikTok and social media could be a tool for advocacy for agriculture. So after that, I started making videos about different legal issues that I was working on and things that I'm interested in, like the Endangered Species Act and the clean water issues and things like that. And I started being asked to go and speak about these issues in different places. And so in September, I quit working at the law firm full time. I started working there part time. So I still help them with research and different meetings and things when they just need a little bit of extra help. But now I have started my own business called Wild West Advocacy, where I use social media and public speaking. I've had the chance to go to Washington, D.C. to lobby Congress about these issues that I care so deeply about that impact agriculture and natural resources every day. And so that was how my two illegal backyard bottle calves got me my business where I am today.
I love it. That is such a cute story too. And I love the way that you mentioned, you know, like God was orchestrating things in your life. And even though you didn't quite understand them at the time, now look where you're at. And just those divine appointments. You know, I remember calling you back in September. I had no idea that you were stepping away from the lawyer's office and, you know, going out on your own. And then I asked you to come speak. So I just think that's amazing how everything has worked out. And you've grown so much in this last year. It's been so cool to watch you do all the things and travel and speak what you're passionate about.
It's so fun for me. I honestly can't imagine doing anything else. I've always been that weird person that enjoyed public speaking. My mom does a lot of public speaking. And when I was a little kid, she used to make me go with her. She would get to go fun places and either my brother or I would go with her. And she would say, if I have to work, you have to work too. And so starting when I was probably 10, she would give us like 10 minutes of whatever lawyer speech she was giving and make us learn about it so that we could give the speech to whatever audience she happened to be in front of. And you know, it's little things like that from my childhood that I can also credit to being where I am today because it grew me into such a confident public speaker.
Yes, you're very well spoken. And something that I want to bring to everybody's attention is I know that you have a strong background in FFA. So tell us a little bit about how that has prepped you to where you're at today.
Sure. So I started FFA in high school. And I wasn't too involved my first year. I did the creed speech and some of those things. And then my sophomore year, I decided to join the Ag Issues team. And the Ag Issues competition is you get a team of, it's usually seven. I think seven is the maximum number. And you have to choose an agricultural issue and display both sides of the issue. And you can't come to a conclusion about how to solve the problem. You just have to be able to display both sides. And then you give this presentation in front of a panel of judges and they can ask you questions about this issue. My mom coached our team and the issue that we ended up doing was in the Endangered Species Act. Again, just really driving into an issue that I'm very passionate about. And we displayed both the radical environmentalist side and also the agricultural side of this issue and ended up being able to go to the national competition and won the national competition in 2012 was the year that we did that. So then after that, I fell in love with the competition and I actually still coach the kids in the Cheyenne high schools. This year, two of the high schools are doing the team. So we've been very busy coaching both teams. And last year, our team went and took fourth at nationals. And it's really fun to get to watch these high school kids learn about these issues. Last year, we did 30 by 30, which is a big issue now that I won't get into because I'll talk forever. And we're also doing an endangered species issue this year. And we're also doing corner crossing issue this year. And it's so fun to help these kids grow into their public speaking skills and teach them how to research and how to get involved in these issues so that they can go and present in front of a panel of judges.
That's amazing. Yeah, I remember you taking that Hope Crew in October, and it's just so important to invest into the younger generations and our children, and to teach them these things, because I feel like it is getting lost in this world. And there's just so many benefits of what you're doing. Okay, so tell me real quick, what would be your advice for somebody wanting to go into litigation? How would they start that process?
So to go into litigation, you have to have, so litigation means to sue. So to get started in litigation, you have to have a cause of action to sue over. So if you're having an issue with the federal government, you first file a complaint against the federal government to however it is you think that you've been wronged. And so there's a whole court process, you know, specifically for suing the federal government that anybody can go through.
Okay, awesome. So tell us real quick how they can reach you for, because I know that's what you do. You help farmers and ranchers bring that into court. So do you have a website right now? And is there a phone number and an email that you would want to put in the chat for all of us?
I do. I have a website that's being built right now. It should be launched within the next couple of weeks, but I can definitely put a phone number and an email into the chat so anybody can reach me about litigation issues, or I use social media to highlight the legal issues that people are having. So if you have an endangered species issue that's really impacting your operation or any other kind of legal issue, I do wildfires and bison issues and all kinds of things, then you can reach out to me and I will use my platform to research the laws and talk about the laws and how they negatively impact agriculture.
Awesome. All right, ladies, we're going to take a short break real quick. So if y'all need to grab a drink, we're going to get started here in about 30 seconds.
We all know that it's not easy being a woman in agriculture, and there are a lot of women out there that are living and working in rural communities, and sometimes it takes 30 minutes to 2 hours to drive into town, and sometimes it's just not easy or possible for women to drive in to network with other people. So this is just a great way for you to stay connected with other like-minded women who are out there making a difference in agriculture. We start this podcast out as a Zoom through Ag Women Connect. It is held every Thursday at 12 p.m. CST time. So if you want to be a part of the conversation, it's not just me interviewing these wonderful women. It is a collaboration of whoever is on that Zoom who wants to be a part of that discussion. You very much well have the opportunity to ask questions to our guest speakers. And so that's what I wanted from the very beginning. It wasn't about necessarily me interviewing these women, but inviting other women to be a part of this conversation. We have had so much fun doing this. So we invite you to be a part of the conversation. You can join us every Thursday at 12 p.m. Central Time. If you're an Ag Women Connect member, you will be emailed that Zoom link every week to be a part of it. And then we turn that Zoom into a wonderful podcast that is being broadcasted on Rural Radio, Sirius XM 147, every Saturday at 10 a.m. Eastern Time.
Okay, Sarah, so let's get to the good stuff. We, you know, we love hearing about stories. And so we want to know like what you're working on right now, what you're excited about, and what you're trying to do as far as like bridging the gap, as far as helping other people understand like what is going on within our society and the agriculture industry right now.
Absolutely. I have several exciting projects. Just last week, I was in Washington, D.C. lobbying Congress about some Endangered Species Act reform. The Endangered Species Act was passed in 1973. And when it was initially passed, I believe that it was with good intentions. It was to recover species. It was to facilitate relationships with agriculture and land users. And unfortunately, in the last 50 years, Congress is making a big deal out of the Endangered Species Act this year because it is now 50 years old. But in the last 50 years, there have been over 1,900 species listed on the endangered species list, and only 66 have recovered. It's roughly a 3.4% success rate. And at the same time, while they are failing to recover species, they being the federal government, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service mostly, they are also putting farmers and ranchers out of business. When endangered species is found on your property and critical habitat is designated, critical habitat is the anywhere where the species either historically lived, currently lives, or could potentially live in the future, which is a difficult one to grasp, that habitat cannot be adversely modified. And so, for example, the Preble's Meadow Jumping Mouse was listed in Wyoming, and it lives in riparian areas, you know, so areas with a stream, or in the cases in the ranches here, an irrigation ditch. And when the critical habitat was designated, the ranchers were no longer allowed to graze their cattle in those areas because they were worried that the cattle would damage the irrigation ditch or step on the mice. And so having an endangered species on your property can be really detrimental because it basically shuts down the operation that you have that land for. And so lots of people go out of business over this. They lose their livelihoods. Multi-generational operations just go away. And unfortunately, the way that the court system has worked, courts have decided that endangered species take precedent over anything else. There's a case called TVA versus Hill, where the court decided that an endangered fish, the snail darter, was more important than building a dam for flood prevention. And so you have court cases like that that make the endangered species take precedent over anything else. Now, at the same time, so this is our third big factor in the endangered species process, is you have radical environmental groups that have absolutely figured out how to take advantage of this law. So when the law was written, it was written with all of these specific deadlines where it was intended for the federal government to be held accountable for recovery of these species. So once a species is petitioned to be listed, there's only 90 days where the Fish and Wildlife Service has to complete adequate scientific research to determine if the species should be listed or not. And if they miss that deadline, then these radical environmental groups can sue. And because they're a nonprofit, they can sue the federal government. And if they win, they get their attorney's fees paid. So what these groups started doing is they will petition to list like 500 species all at the same time. And then the Fish and Wildlife Service only has 90 days to complete research for all 500 species. And then when they inevitably miss that deadline, these groups sue, and then they get their attorney's fees paid. And because they say that this type of law is a specialty law, they're being paid out at over $700 an hour. I can tell you, in our law practice, which is doing the same type of law at my family's law firm, not a single person gets paid $700 an hour. That's an outrageous amount. And so we found that these groups are making millions and millions of dollars off, millions and millions of dollars out of our tax dollars over the Endangered Species Act alone. And because they are litigating and suing so much, the Fish and Wildlife Service is, rather than focusing on recovery and trying to find real solutions for these at-risk species, they're just doing whatever these groups want so that they don't get sued again. The worst group for this is the Center for Biological Diversity. It's an organization that is active in all 50 states. And in 2021 alone, they spent $500,000 on litigation, so over suing the federal government, yet they made $10 million in 2021 alone. And that comes from the fees that they get because they're a nonprofit suing the federal government and settlement costs. And so the Endangered Species Act has all of these factors working against it, and it just doesn't work. And so what is happening is you have species that are not recovering. They are going to go extinct. And you have all of these people going out of business because the Fish and Wildlife Service is more concerned about fighting litigation than they are about actually working with landowners to make sure that the landowner can stay in business and also help with recovery of the species. And so last week when I was back in DC, I got to talk to 10 members of Congress, and we attended a hearing on endangered species issues. And we got to tell them, like, these are the problems in the Endangered Species Act. And we don't want the Endangered Species Act to go away. Like, nobody wants species to go extinct, but it needs to be reformed so that, number one, it's effective. And number two, it doesn't totally decimate agriculture communities, which is exactly what's happening now.
That was so sad. I mean, just the things that you said, I knew that it was not good for farmers and ranchers, and they were fighting, you know, and they're constantly fighting. But I mean, to give us that kind of detail on what's really going on, like, our society just doesn't know about it at all. And so that's why it's so important for you mm-hmm. and other people to keep advocating and telling the public about this, because it's just mind-boggling.
And that's exactly right. One of the things that's difficult is, my dad always says, you can do anything to anybody if you can allege that it's in the name of the environment. Because the Endangered Species Act, you say, well, this species is going extinct, we need to save that species. And everybody's like, yeah, obviously we do. We want to save the species. But what they don't say is that you're not actually saving the species. So these people are donating to all these causes without really understanding what it is that they're donating to, because the narrative sounds so good when you're saying, you know, we're protecting endangered species. But the reality is, farmers and ranchers do more for endangered species every day. In one single day, they do more for these endangered species than any of these radical nonprofit organizations do. And so I think it's really important for farmers and ranchers to say, this is what we're doing for the environment, and this is how we are trying to help. Because for decades now, we really haven't had a voice in environmental issues. Farmers and ranchers are so busy working and, you know, providing for everybody that they never take the time to stop and say, this is what I'm doing for you. And after decades of the environmentalists being able to control the narrative, we have a long way to go to explain to the public that what we're doing is way more beneficial for the environment than anybody in these nonprofit organizations does.
Absolutely. I agree with you 100%. Our farmers and ranchers are the people who take care of our land. And we are so good to our animals. You couldn't have said that any more perfect.
Thank you. You know, and it's people don't really think about the unintended consequences of these policies. And so, for example, last week in DC, I took a group of farmers from Central Oregon back with me, and they were telling their stories to Congress. And what has happened in their situation is, in the middle of Oregon, there's a river called the Deschutes. And that is where the farmers get their irrigation water. They built a reservoir called the Wickiup Reservoir, which was built 100 years ago in the 1940s, so almost 100 years ago, specifically to provide irrigation for these farmers. Well, then the Oregon spotted frog was listed, and that reservoir was designated as critical habitat. So the reservoir that only exists because of the farmers, the frog only went there because of the human management. You know, the wetlands and things wouldn't exist if the reservoir wasn't there. And now they are stopping the irrigation for farmers. These farmers that I took are only receiving a quarter of the irrigation water that they're paying for, that they have to pay for until the year 2040. And one of these farmers grows wildflowers. He has a place called Obsidian Seed, and it's beautiful. It's in this valley, and he grows all of these beautiful wildflowers. And then he harvests the seed, and he is actually the biggest wildflower seed grower in the United States. And a lot of his flowers go to the monarch butterfly corridor, which runs from Minnesota down to Texas, down a freeway there. And so they plant flowers for habitat for the monarch butterfly. And the monarch butterfly is going to be listed on the endangered species list this year. They're making a listing decision in November, and not a single soul thinks that it's not going to be listed. It's going to be listed. But he has only 40% of his farm in production right now because of these irrigation issues. And so you have one endangered species that is putting a farmer out of business. And this farmer is absolutely necessary for, quite frankly, a more important species, you know, a pollinator. And this farmer actually has a monopoly on the market. He is the only one who grows three varieties of wildflower that is used in this corridor. And so you have the Fish and Wildlife Service that just has no idea what's going on. They're doing one thing with their right hand, one thing with their left hand, and they're not talking to each other. And so they are working to their own detriment as far as species recovery. And I think that's, again, because they don't have time to focus on recovery. They spend all their time focusing on keeping themselves out of litigation and keeping these environmental groups satisfied.
Right. Just merely surviving.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my goodness. Well, let's shift gears a few minutes. Tell us a little bit about what has been going on with the Mexican wolves, because I know that is mm-hmm. a hot topic and it's very interesting. So, and I think you're planning a trip there, aren't you?
So I don't have one. Well, I'm maybe going to go to New Mexico this summer for their New Mexico Cattle Growers summer meeting. Mm-hmm. Possibly. I don't have that solidified yet, but the Mexican wolf issue is totally crazy. So the Mexican wolf was listed, I believe, in the 80s initially, or maybe the late 70s. It was one of the first species to be listed on the endangered species list. The Mexican wolf is basically it's in between the size of a coyote and a wolf. So it's actually a smaller breed of wolf. Originally, when it was listed, they needed to have 79 breeding pairs for the species to be considered recovered. Well, they moved the goalpost. So they said, well, now for it to be recovered, it has to be 150. Then it has to be 350. And last spring, they actually removed the cap altogether. And so the wolves are basically perpetually protected forever, which is an issue for farmers and ranchers. I know a rancher who has lost at times 50% of her calf crop to Mexican wolves. You cannot harm, harass, or kill, or attempt to do any of those things to an endangered species or to this Mexican wolf without threat of up to $50,000 in fines or 5 years in federal prison. The only time you can kill a wolf is if you actively see it taking a bite out of your livestock or actively threatening a family member. Another rancher I know down there, they have so many wolves now. Another rancher down there has little kids, and she has, you know, play set and a trampoline for her kids. And she actually built a cage around the play set to lock her kids in because she has a wolf den less than a mile from her house, and the wolves will come and get like on her porch. And that's, you know, building a cage around a play set is one of those things that you would think that can't be real. That's got to be a publicity stunt, but I have seen it myself. And it's like this big iron post. It's a very serious cage. And these people are just terrified because they legally cannot protect their families from this species that it's aggressive. It kills horses and there's stories of dairy cattle and, you know, pregnant cows. And it's absolutely crazy what they are doing to these people, and they legally can't do anything to protect themselves.
Yeah, you were telling me even when they get on and off the bus that they've got, you know, a little waiting mm-hmm. station there too.
Yeah, they have little buildings that they built that the kids have to wait inside of when they're waiting for a bus because the wolves are just everywhere. You know, right now they're saying that for the first time, you know, the wolves have crossed over 200 for their population. However, the people who live in the area do not think that that number is accurate. The wolves can also breed with coyotes and dogs and other things. And so you've got all these weird hybrid animals that you also can't shoot. And the Center for Biological Diversity, you know, my best friends, the radical environmentalists, just petitioned to list the coyote on the endangered species list in New Mexico for likeness to the Mexican wolf.
We will be right back after this quick break, but make sure to tune in to catch the final Q&A session.
We all know that it's not easy being a woman in agriculture. There are a lot of women out there that are living and working in rural communities. Sometimes it takes 30 minutes to 2 hours to drive into town. And sometimes it's just not easy for women to drive in to network with other people. So this is just a great way for you to stay connected with other like-minded women who are out there making a difference in agriculture. We start this podcast out as a Zoom through Ag Women Connect. It is held every Thursday at 12 p.m. CST time. So if you want to be a part of the conversation, it's not just me interviewing these wonderful women. It is a collaboration of whoever is on that Zoom who wants to be a part of that discussion. You very much well have the opportunity to ask questions to our guest speakers. And so that's what I wanted from the very beginning. It wasn't about me interviewing these women, but inviting other women to be a part of this conversation. We have had so much fun doing this. So we invite you to be a part of the conversation. You can join us every Thursday at 12 p.m. Central Time. If you're an Ag Women Connect member, you will be emailed that Zoom link every week to be a part of it. And then we turn that Zoom into a wonderful podcast that is being broadcasted on Rural Radio, Sirius XM 147, every Saturday at 10 a.m. Eastern Time.
Okay, we are back with Sarah Fallon. Sarah, tell us how more people can get involved in what you're doing and just how we can make a difference for our farmers and ranchers.
Sure. A second ago, we were talking about the Mexican wolf and how the Center for Biological Diversity has just petitioned to list the coyote on the endangered species list. And one of the things that you can always do, because there's a law called the National Environmental Policy Act, and it requires that for any action that may significantly impact the human environment, that there is public participation allowed. And so when species are petitioned to be listed, and then the Fish and Wildlife Service does their adequate scientific research, they then post a draft rule in the Federal Register, which allows people to go and make public comments. And so anytime that there is a major environmental action impacting society, you can go and you can comment. And the Fish and Wildlife Service or any federal agency is required to read all of the comments. They generally will do a count up of how many there are in favor of a rule or not in favor of a rule. And so that commenting process is extremely important. And so I always, you know, to get involved directly in these issues, even if you don't live in New Mexico or you live, you know, you can be wherever you want, and commenting on these issues to tell the government what it is you think should be happening or not happening, or some of the problems with their rule, it's extremely important. And so comments period should be in a couple of weeks regarding the coyote. And so that's one thing that people can definitely do. Another thing people can do is be sharing on social media. One thing that I've noticed on social media is there is a big trend for people wanting to know where things come from and how things work. And so people generally want to know where their food comes from. The problem is, previous to the last few years, there really hasn't been a great way for them to know that. And so if you don't want to share about your own operation, sharing other people's operations, because you never know who's going to see them on social media. As far as getting involved with what I'm doing specifically, I want to hear about any of these environmental issues. I've talked almost solely about endangered species today, but you know, there's the clean water rules, which are going to be determined. It went to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court will basically be determining how much control the federal government has over waters in the United States. And so that's a big issue, or grazing issues, or any kind of land use issues. I want to know about them because I really want to be telling the public about them. And I want to be able to explain to them, you know, here's what's happening and legally, here's why it's happening. Because people are so interested in just understanding why things are the way they are. And, you know, the social media platforms are a really great way to reach audiences that, you know, I live in Wyoming. The chances of me being in contact with someone from, like, you know, New York or Maine or something like that is pretty slim unless you use social media. And so constantly sharing those stories or reaching out to me and telling me about some of these issues that I can share. I think our biggest asset is information. You know, we have the facts and we have the logic on our side. We just need to be able to use social media as a vehicle to get that information out to the public.
Sarah, this is Ashley Cash. Can I ask a quick question? So I'm here with Vanessa and we're in Texas and you're in Wyoming. And of course, we probably have listeners from New Mexico and Oklahoma and hopefully all over the country. But I tend to find out about things like these Endangered Species Acts and the Clean Water Act almost after the fact, right? Mm-hmm. So how do we as farmers and ranchers find out what public action is taking place in our local areas regarding endangered species or even nationally, but that would affect us on our local levels? Like, how do we find out about that so that we can participate in trying to make the laws better?
Sure. So I would say, I mean, everybody, when it comes to endangered species, somebody's got an agenda somewhere. And so I think the Fish and Wildlife Service has a really good database. You can type in, you know, endangered species in my area. And the Fish and Wildlife Service has a database where they will even show maps and show areas where endangered species exist. Right now, there's 1,837 species listed. That's plants and fish and animals. And so they're really all over the place. And so that is one resource. Local farm bureaus are usually really good about getting involved in the commenting process that I was talking about earlier and having information on, you know, the species or the issues that are impacting your local areas. And so I would also reach out to your local farm bureau as they've been a really great resource for that also.
Thank you.
Sarah, maybe it'd be fun if you started your own like page where you posted what you knew about, because that's like, you're like the access point. Like if I needed to know, I'd probably call you at this point because you know more than anyone, right? So I'm interested in that too, for sure.
That's a good idea. I have Kenzie doing my website for me right now. And she was asking for some input. So maybe I should have a page where I talk about the species that I'm aware of and start building a database for that.
Yeah,
that's
for
a really
sure.
good
and you,
idea.
Yeah, you can even put like latest updates, links to the you know, like web links to the latest updates, mm-hmm. and then you can kind of have your own narrative. That would be super helpful, I bet, for a lot of farmers and ranchers because they like, know, and trust you, and they know you're going to tell them the right thing, right? Who knows who's feeding your own farm bureau? It's sad because in Preston, Idaho, when I ran for governor, there was so much misinformation, even throughout the farm and ranch community, right? I would go to one place and they'd tell me something about the frogs in Oregon, in Idaho, that wasn't true. And I would be like, this is not true, right? And so you are a really good source for that. And I really appreciate this conversation.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. That's a great idea. Are there other questions? Or I could keep talking about I could talk about any of these issues much longer than anybody wants to listen about them and just things that I think we should be doing to make changes. But I'm happy to take questions about anything going on in your areas as well. This is such a great, I like this podcast because everybody's from really different places.
So what do you see as the three biggest issues facing us on a national level that will impact the most farmers and ranchers?
Number one is definitely the Endangered Species Act. So I mentioned earlier that the monarch butterfly is going to be listed. That is an extremely scary listing because the monarch butterfly habitat is literally the entirety of the lower 48 of the United States. The monarch butterfly migrates from Mexico to Canada and back. It takes them 5 generations to do it. But they do that every single year. And so it's the entirety of the United States that now has to worry about a critical habitat designation. what's scary about that is pesticide use. You have, you know, vehicular use, because a lot of pollinators and things are killed by vehicles and every day. You have to worry about like small predators that, and these are all things that the Fish and Wildlife Service would have the ability to make regulations over if they deemed that that was what was scientifically needed to do. And so that is number one, I think the biggest issue. So monarch butterfly is an extremely scary listing. The next thing is I am so anxious about the Waters of the US ruling. So the Clean Water Act was passed, and it says that the federal government has control over navigable waters. And when you think of the term a navigable water, you think water that you can like put a boat in and, you know, float commerce down. So that's supposed to be major rivers, major lakes, you know, the Great Lakes, like the Mississippi River, things like that. And each presidential administration has the ability to make, to have their agencies write regulations or rules interpreting those laws. And so what counts as waters of the United States, or what counts as navigable, since the term navigable is not defined in the Clean Water Act, has changed with every presidential administration. And so you look at, you know, anything like regulations that the Obama administration would write, and then the Trump administration, and then the Biden administration, and those are obviously huge swings in policy. And so what has happened is sometimes navigable rivers means just like ones you can put a boat in and sail down and like the wetlands around them. But under Obama and under Biden's rule, it's really like streams that are connected to streams that are connected to a ditch that's only full part time of the year. And so under Biden and Obama rules, most water in the United States, whether it's groundwater or surface water, will be controlled, and you need a federal permit to dig a hole or do anything under those rules. Under Trump, there's still quite a bit of waters of the United States, but less so. And this Supreme Court ruling is supposed to pin down what navigable waters actually means. And so that will be a huge deal for farmers and ranchers, because if you need to dig an irrigation ditch, or you need to put in a new stock tank or anything like that, you could need a federal permit based on the direction that the Supreme Court decides. So that is a really big deal. The last thing that I would say is the pork producers case out of California. So that is a case that also went to the US Supreme Court. And that case was over a law that was passed in California that got rid of farrowing crates for pigs, and saying if you wanted to sell pork in the state of California, you could not use farrowing crates, even if you're a completely different, if you're in a different state, saying you have to comply with these, you know, animal welfare rules. I don't know who makes up the rules. It's just like an arbitrary person in California who says this is what's good for animal welfare. I very seriously doubt that it's a farmer or rancher, probably an environmentalist. Also, all eggs have to be laid by cage-free hens by the year 2025. Veal calves had to have a certain amount of space. And then these rules were so strict that, you know, for example, the veal calves, there was not a single veal facility in the world that complied with these standards. And so California is 13% of the pork market in the United States. And so all of these states who rely on California to make a profit off of their hog farms has to completely change their facilities to be able to sell in that state. And the issue is whether, my phone's ringing. The issue is whether California has the ability to regulate businesses not within the state of California, or if it is a state's rights issue where the state is allowed to make whatever rules they want within their state. And so it's a really big decision over the Commerce Clause. And so if California made rules saying you have to comply with these animal welfare standards to sell your product in our state, theoretically, any state could do that. And so that's going to be a really big impact. There are actually, I think Vanessa looked up the numbers. Did you say 20? Maybe 19 states, maybe 9 states that have passed that all eggs have to be cage-free. or the hens have to be cage free. And so people are having to rebuild their facilities. And that's part of the reason why agricultural products can get more expensive, is if you have to comply with rules that require you to completely build a new facility. And so that decision should also be coming out this spring and has the ability to impact really interstate commerce in general, but especially agriculture producers. And people are going to have to then navigate which states that they are complying with if they don't all have to have the same rules. So I would say that's the third biggest thing right now.
Sarah, thank you so much for being on our podcast today. I know in my heart that what you're doing is necessary and vital for all the farmers and ranchers and preserving our agriculture industry. You did an amazing job speaking on what you're passionate about.
Thank you so much for having me. AgWomen Connect is an amazing organization getting this information to the people who need it. Thank you very much for including me.
Thank you for tuning into this episode of Ag Talk. Your story matters. Make sure to tune in every Tuesday for new episodes and learn more about us and our mission at agwomenconnect.com. You can find us on all major social media platforms, and we can't wait to share your ag story.